as much a battle as the Israelites faced on the real battlefield, our spiritual battlefields, causes much pain and grief. The impact that it has on us, on those around us, when we're struggling with sin or we're struggling with challenges and trials that are not of our own making, is very acute and very real. How we respond to those is critically important, not just for our health, but for the health of those around us. We looked at how we needed to give up anger and what we replaced it with. We looked at giving up our covetousness and how we replaced it with something more constructive. We tonight look at one huge problem. Make every effort to live in peace with all men and to be holy. Without holiness, no one will see the Lord. See to it that no one misses the grace of God, and that no bitter root grows up to cause trouble and defile many. No bitter root grows up. Have you ever struggled with bitterness? Maybe not at the start. Maybe you didn't even realize the seed being planted. And sometimes the seed can be planted without any obvious signs. Who would genuinely know what seed is on the grass until the weeds begin to grow? No one knows. You could look out at a perfect lawn, and yet you could come back to that very same lawn weeks or months later, and it could be overgrown in weeds. From first appearances, you were not aware of the fact that the seed had entered the soil. But it does. A comment that someone made, either innocuously or with purposeful intent. An action that was committed against you or against someone that you loved. A memory of childhood. A humiliation that you'd undergone. A throwaway line that someone made that you respected and loved. Harsh treatment. Inappropriate behavior. And when that comment was made, it stung a little bit. Every human being naturally hurts when someone says something hurtful or does something that has hurt you. Under different circumstances, you may have simply dismissed it. The seed never was able to take root. The conditions may have been such that the seed was never able to have opportunity to grow. But like any landscape, given the right amount of sun and the right amount of rain, suddenly weeds can thrive in that fertile environment. And what started off as only a seed has now taken root. And because it has taken root, it now begins to flourish and it begins to grow, and its impact and effect on the environment around it is all too apparent. And that's what bitterness actually does within the human heart and soul. It was just a comment. It was simply an inappropriate action. It was something either intended or unintended. But bitterness began to take root. And if you're being honest with yourself, it has not only taken root, it has been difficult to dislodge. And the more root that it has, the more difficult its removal. And when that root has been there for years, the root has been able to spread to so many other areas of your life that it's hard now to distinguish what hurts more. But it has made you bitter. It has made you resentful. It has made you think things that you never thought you would think, and even contemplate saying things that you would never have said. In fact, it has so many triggers in your life that it makes enjoyment of life very difficult. You know that that bitterness has taken root because as soon as someone mentions that person's name, all sorts of feelings begin to emerge. Feelings that you would never have harbored and certainly never have nurtured years previous, suddenly taken root. And it's more than just an emotion. It has a physiological effect. You feel it in your stomach, you feel it in your body, you feel it in your mind, because you feel it in your heart. And it has a devastating effect, a disabling effect in your life. It means that that relationship has been strained. You no longer can live at peace. Every effort to live at peace has now been jeopardized because of the root of bitterness. You're in hostility towards those who have shown hostility to you. You want your revenge. And surely we looked at that God said, vengeance is mine, but you want yours. You feel that you've been unjustly treated because that's the root of bitterness. You were treated in a way that you did not deserve. You deserve better than you have received. And when you compare your life with those around you, your environment is much more harsh than theirs. Even though you may not know exactly what's going on in the other person's life or what they are contending with, now because your reflections, your observations have been tainted by bitterness, you no longer can see or hear properly. Your reflections become entangled in that root of bitterness. It has affected so many areas and pathways of your life. Impossible to live at peace. And yet, we are called to be holy, and without holiness, no one will see the Lord. Devastating. But if it were to end just there, as a pastor, you deal with bitter roots more often than you would like to. Not only within yourself, and I also have had to contend with bitterness, but you attend the homes of many people who have a personal problem with bitterness. Not long into the conversations, it begins to emerge. But see, the problem is, and this is the devastation, the Bible teaches us. See to it that no one misses the grace of God and that no bitter root grows up to cause trouble and defile many. Oh, how horrific. And that's when the battle with bitterness becomes so dangerous. Oh Lord, I thought I was the only one who would be affected by this. And not for a moment and in a million lifetimes did you think that bitterness had the potentiality to defile many. You never thought that it would endanger as many people as it possibly did. But it's gangrenous in its effect. And you know, and I know, when the root of bitterness begins to flow out, begins to spill out, that it affects your relationship, not only with the person who you had the hostility with, or that your relationship has been marred with, it begins to affect the good relationships that you possess with those around you. Suddenly, they become the topic of conversation in the presence of someone who was never involved. But now, because that root of bitterness has grown so deep, you rehearse every opportunity to bring defilement to the person who has injured you. Even in the presence of others who were never involved, in the presence of others who never had exposure to the situation or problem, they are listening to your bitterness unfold and you're speaking in relation to the other. Now, the effect that that has on them is that you may plant a seed of bitterness now in their heart. Suddenly, they begin to take sides. Suddenly, they begin to see how you have been unjustly treated. They begin to feel your pain, and they begin to nurture the pain of separation that you have between them and that other, between that person and you. They nurture it. And suddenly, bitterness begins to well up within them. Not only now do you have a problem with that person, but they have a problem with that person. And that problem begins to spread. And that's why Paul talks about the effect that it may defile many. What happens when you become aware of it? What happens? What hope is there? How can I reverse this situation? Has God anything to say to me? Can I change this? Well, this is the good news of the gospel. You can. You can. You can say no to bitterness. It's a difficult journey. It's a painful one. It takes sacrifice. But it is possible. And the liberation that comes from that, of uprooting the root of bitterness, is euphoric. It is an absolute celebration to be able to let go. I want you to turn with me to 1 Samuel chapter 30. I want you to read with me from verse 5. David's two wives have been captured, and Hinnom of Jezreel and Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. David was greatly distressed because the men were talking of stoning him. Each one was bitter in spirit because of his sons and daughters. But David found strength in the Lord his God. But David finds strength in the Lord his God. If anyone had the right to be bitter, it's David. Oh no, he was a sinner like us. He was involved in an adulterous affair, sent a man to the front to be murdered. Yep, he had every likeness like us, but he had every right to be bitter in his life. He had been assigned, appointed by God. He stepped out onto the battlefield for Israel. He took on the mighty giant Goliath, trusted in God when few others would do it. You see, Goliath had called out the Israelites with this challenge: I'm 9 feet tall, but my God is even bigger than I am. You have a wee boy who wants to fight me. That's about the size of your God. And I don't want to fight you all. I just want to fight one representative of your country. You see, I'm kind as a Philistine. We could slaughter you all here today. You haven't sent anyone out in 40 days, even though I've been calling you out. If our army was to go in now, we could simply annihilate you because you're full of fear. You'll not be able to resist our advances, but in my kindness, I'll fight one of your representatives. And whoever wins that battle, well then, if you beat us, we'll be your slaves. If we beat you, you'll be our slaves. It's as simple as that. David risked his own life, and he stood out in front of Goliath, and he killed Goliath. In other words, he saved Israel. He put his life on the line for not only his immediate family, for his king, his eternal king, and the people of Israel. He should have been a hero in the eyes of those who gave him their armor to try. But instead, he had created an enemy and not a friend that day. One so overcome with jealousy, and bitterness. You see, Saul was in a no-win situation now because of his lack of trust in God. Because Saul couldn't win. The moment he was disobedient to God, he was lost. He lost, pure and simple. If he had sent David out onto that battlefield, and David had got killed, he had been the worst king ever. How dare you put a child out on the battlefield, a 16-year-old, to face the might of Goliath? If there were such a thing as social services, you would be interviewed. You did a despicable thing, Saul. And you a warrior. You a fighter. You a man who stands ahead above us, as the scriptures have told us, with that many notches on your belt for those that you've been able to kill, and you send a child out to die? You forfeit the right to be a king. You forfeit the right for our respect. And I'm sure that Saul, as he stood there that day, thought, I hope he doesn't get killed. Because if he does, I'm finished. Yet Saul must have been thinking, I hope he doesn't win either. Because if he does, I'm finished. Suddenly, a child did what I couldn't. A child? A 16-year-old? When I even fought a battle that I should have fought. So when they talked about Saul having killed thousands and David killing his tens of thousands, it hurt Saul more than you can imagine and more than I could have imagined. It cut right to the heart of a king who was too frightened to defend his people, but David did it. What did David get? Nothing but Saul's revenge from day one. He tried to track him down. He tried to kill him. He made his life miserable. He sent him into caves for his own hiding. And if that were not bad enough, he loses some of his wives. Now he has personal lament. He has national lament. He's having a tough and terrible time. And now he's receiving the scorn of his own people. David was greatly distressed because the men were talking of stoning him. Each one was bitter in spirit because his sons and daughters. David, they are captured because of you. The great wee lad who stood out on the battlefield and saved us from Goliath now can't save our own sons and daughters from being taken away, from being raped by other soldiers. Our children are now going to be exposed to all sorts of actions that we have no control over. David, you don't deserve to live. You deserve to die. And he's greatly distressed because they were wanting to stone him. Can you see why they have the right to be bitter? How did God allow him to get here? How did this nation allow him to get here when so much had gone so well for so long? And now he's facing all sorts of battles and challenges that he has no control over. But yet, what did he do? What did he do? He did what David always did best. That was why he was a man after God's own heart. Oh, yeah, he committed adultery. Yes, he did wrong things, but God loved him because he always did this. When faced with the difficulty in those days, but David found strength in the Lord, his God. David found strength in the Lord, his God. Thank God, strength. In the midst of all these natural feelings of bitterness, and that all that you have been wrong, find your strength not in the ridicule that you so easily engage in, but in the forgiveness that you need to impart. For when we engage as God has engaged with us, then we start to operate not in our strength, but his strength. And we need the strength of God, and you need the strength of God in order to overcome this root of bitterness, because you cannot pull it up. The weed has got so strong, the bitterness is so deep, that human effort alone is incapable of removing it. You have tried, yes, you have tried. Time and time and time again, you have stood where that weed stands, and you have hurt your hands as you have tried to pull it out of your life. And it has brought greater frustration and greater pain. And you know why? Because then you hate the person even more for being responsible for this. The effort that I'm having to make to remove this bitterness should not have been an effort that I needed to make. I shouldn't be compelled by their actions or the things that they have said to actually have to spend time trying to uproot this bitterness or these things that have entrenched me. It's their fault. God said, listen, move on. Get my strength today. I will give you my strength. I will deliver this into your hands if you put your full dependence upon me. Now let's pull together at this point. And as we pull together, operating my strength, let me uproot this bitterness from your life. Let me set you free. Let me be the one who dislodges this and moves this on. As they walked around the walls of Jericho with no brick dislodged, do what I say until I give the command. Then together we pull and this root comes free. And as a consequence, you end up becoming free as a result. In my strength, we pull together. And God will enable you tonight to begin to deal with the roots of bitterness if you say to him, Lord, in your strength, help me overcome how I feel about that person. Help me overcome what I feel about this situation. Help me. And he will. And in this passage, Paul makes something abundantly clear. See to it that no one misses the grace of God and that no bitter root grows up to cause trouble and defile many. See to it that no one misses the grace of God. And here's the key. When you nurture the root of bitterness, you miss his grace and his strength. And that is key. And Satan will try to keep you from it as long as he can because he knows the power of grace. Now, in that moment of the root of bitterness and being overpowered and overwhelmed by a sense of bitterness and resentment, at that moment, you miss the grace of God. When you nurture and fertilize these feelings of disobedience towards God in rebellion against him, choosing to feel this way, choosing to act this way over and against his word, over against his instructions, God simply stands back at that point and says, my grace is not available today. My grace is not available. And when God removes his grace as an act of discipline in your life. Remember, this is talking about discipline, of how the Lord disciplines those that he loves. He may, for a moment, remove his presence and power and his grace in order for you to see what the full effect and devastation of human rebellion is like. What true disobedience before God actually manifests itself as. And that's a horrible scene, and that's a horrible picture, because for one moment you thought God had forsaken you, and actually in his discipline, he stepped back. That's what he had done. And you were saying to yourself, but how is it I can't deal with this bitterness? How is it that I can't overcome this resentment? How is it that this root is so deep that I can't dislodge it? How is it that I think about this person the way that I think about them? How is it that I'm rehearsing thoughts about them that I never thought possible? How is it that I have said things that I thought was so uncharacteristic of me? I look at myself in the mirror and I despise what I see. And the worst thing about it is when Satan gets that root, he begins to make it even deeper. Because when you look in the mirror and see the person you're becoming, you hate that person even more. Not only the person that's staring back at you in the mirror, but the one who has made you look at yourself in such a way. A way that is uncharacteristic, a person that is unrecognizable. Why? Because that's what human sin without God is actually like. God stepping back in a situation allows not its full effect, but as much as the human person can take of the destructiveness of sin. You see, God couldn't remove himself entirely. Because if he did, we would crumble, we would die, we would have no life. We would cave in our own destruction and corruption. But he steps back enough to let you see the effects of it without his power and presence, and it's a horrifying abyss. It's a terrible place to look into because it is full of darkness, it's full of pain, it's full of insult, it's full of injury, it's satanic. It takes its hold and its effect, it is brutal. It means that you would treat people in such uncharacteristic ways because it's taking effect. The seed has grown even deeper, taking root. Its root goes down. God says, I have to remove my grace at this point to let you see the full travesty of your actions. And you're standing at the edge of the cliff, looking into the deep abyss. And then God comes. He says, do you see what it does? Do you see what bitterness does without me? It could destroy you today. But I love you enough not to let that happen. Now, are we ready to move on? Are we ready to overcome? Are we ready to be champions again? Are we ready to walk together? Are we ready to love together? Are we ready to serve? Are we ready? And what happens at that moment when God takes you to that place when you are convinced that you don't like what you see and you want rid of what has captured you for so long? What happens? We do not miss the grace of God. We receive the grace of God as a gift. Poured into our lives in ever-increasing measure. Grace upon grace upon grace. And what does that grace look like? It looks like a son. It looks like the one who came. It looks like the one who walked this earth. We see his pictures all over the New Testament. We see his son in full action. We see his son full of grace and mercy. We look at the grace of Jesus Christ, who for the joy set before him endured the cross. This is the context of it. Isn't it? Therefore, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of God forever. Scorning its shame. If anyone had a right to feel bitter, if anyone had a right to resent how they were being treated by the human species, it was God's son. Have we ever been treated like he was treated? Never. And we never could be, because we were never to bear the sin of the world upon our shoulders. We were never to bear the full attack of Satan as he did. We were never to hear the crowd call for his death in the way that he had. We were never subjected to the humiliation that the Son of God went through. We were never subjected to the spiritual battle of the cross. We were never ever exposed to the separation of the Father for a few moments as the darkness prevailed over the earth. We never had his experiences. And yet, who for the joy set before him endured this cross, despising its shame? Who for the joy set before him? What? You and I. What? Going home? Yes, the Son was going home. That was the joy that was set before him. Yes, the Son was taking you there as his redeemed people. That was the joy that was set before him. Did he have a cause to have a root of bitterness? More so than you and I would ever possess. But did he choose to reject it? Yes, he did. Why did he choose to do that? Because he was the Son of God. How was he capable of doing that? Because he was full of grace and love and mercy. He didn't have to make an effort to become these things. That's what he was by nature. And what do we become when we are born from above? We become the sons and daughters of God. We have a godly inheritance. We have the capacity of holiness. We have the capacity of wholeness. We have a God who comes to us and fashions in our heart the same heart that he possesses, and it beats with the same pulse. And he sends his Holy Spirit into our lives in order to make that possible. So when God cries from heaven, put your hand on the weed, and I put my hand to it too, let's pull it out, he can do it. He has the capacity, he has the power, and it is the grace of God that enables you to make it possible. Let no one miss the grace of God by letting a root of bitterness creep up. But if they depend on me, if they make God my strength, then my Son will pour grace into their lives, unimaginable, unthinkable grace that is able to forgive the most horrendous of crimes that have been committed, the most horrendous of insults that have been issued, the most horrendous of circumstances that you've had to bear. In that moment, the grace of God does a supernatural act that is as great as any other miracle. He changes who you are. He gives you the capacity of gracious responses because you're now full of grace. No root of bitterness. And when you see that person, you no longer think about them in the way that you once did. It no longer eats away at your heart. You no longer rehearse the things that you would like to say or do in their presence. Suddenly, and by the grace and miracle of God, you begin to think and act differently. The hostilities are over. You can live at peace. You've made the effort, and now the wall of division has broken down. And when you sit with them, you no longer feel as you once did. God has done a miracle. And what does it do? It transforms you and it transforms them. When grace has filled our lives, grace spills out. You can't contain it. And no words that you would have said, no gritted teeth as you would have offered an apology. You see, in bitterness, if you don't mean it and you try to apologize, just keep your mouth closed. It will land on shallow ground. When people know that you're saying it because somebody told you to, and you know it's the right thing, it will not work. It will not last. But when it comes from an infusion of grace, it is meant because God loves them just as he loves you, and he will create a capacity for love even to those that have wronged you. And when that happens, it is grace upon grace. When that happens, rather than defile people, it makes them whole. Relationships are restored. And old hostilities are buried. And the root of bitterness has been dislodged. And joy can enter your life again. You can walk into the presence of God, and God says, "Let me enfold you with my grace. Son, daughter, you've learned a lovely lesson." Now, does that not feel much better than the way that you were living? Do you not feel freer today than you did then? Do you not experience my love in a more sensitized way than you once did? Do you not enjoy singing the praises now in a way that you had lost? Do you not enjoy opening your word and reading it without the fear that I'm going to say something that you don't like? Because isn't it amazing? Every time we're living in disobedience to God, he just keeps talking to us, and we would rather close it and move on. See, that's what the root of bitterness does. See, that's what disobedience to God does. You no longer want to get into his presence. You no longer want to read his word, because every so often he pops one in there that just wrecks your heart. So why expose yourself to that type of discipline? And so he removes his grace, doesn't he? And suddenly even the activities that you once engaged in no longer hold the same joy. But when he puts grace in there again, you love it. You're back to the word. You're back to worship. You're back to relationships that God intended. And you now have a joy that fills your heart. This is difficult. And it may take weeks, months, and years to master. But if we do, then the untold joy of letting go of bitterness has a dramatic effect. Maybe somebody needs to let go of it tonight. It needs to be pulled out. As it is, let God begin to do his work. Let us pray.